The crane tackles groaned and shuddered until the great beasts came to earth with a dangerous thrashing of trunks and limbs. Cursing troopers were saddling and loading mules, which had one leg strapped up to prevent their lashing out. Waterhoys were pumping their streams into huge wheeled tanks on the railway, for every drop of drink in Zula had to be brought ashore from the condensers of the ships in the bay. And even as I stepped ashore, one of the hoses burst asunder, gushing over the pack mules and swirling round the feet of the elephants, which bellowed and reared in panic as their drivers clung to their trunks to quiet them. Britannia's bridgehead into Abyssinia was, in fact, a godless mess, made infinitely worse by the dust and the stink. Beyond the harbour and camp lay a wide plain with mountains far off, but you could barely see them through the fawn-coloured cloud that hung above the tents and sheds and rooties, and even the waters of the bay, covering everything in a fine powder, which you had to be constantly brushing off your clothes and skin and spitting out. But it was nothing to the stink. A foul carrion reek that took you by the throat and made breathing a poisonous misery.
"If you think this is bad, you should have been here a month ago," says the transport waller, who supervised the loading of my strong boxes into a railway bogey. He was a languid, amiable young haw-haw named Twentyman, a hussar, complete with fly-whisk and followed by a chico, with a bucket of camphorated water, whose duty it was to supply his master with wet clouts to sponge away the dust.
"What is it? Thousands of dead beasts rotting, that's what. Cavalry mounts dropping like flies, mules too, no one knows why, vets never saw the like."
He dropped his wet rag into the bucket with a weary sigh.
"Thank God for the vultures, or we'd have had an epidemic."
I introduced myself, expecting to have to explain my arrival, but no such thing.
"We know all about you, Sir Harry," says he blithely. "Mail sloop from Jeddah brought word of you last week. Deputation from HQ's been waiting for 3 days. Great excitement, what? And these are the long-awaited spondulicos, are they? Splendid. Chuck 'em aboard, Sant. And you, dragoman, summer your stout lads to give us a shove. There's a good chap."
I bade a hasty farewell to Ballantyne, who was itching to get himself and his ship back into the fresh air, and climbed into the bogey with Twentyman, followed by the marines, who seated themselves on the strong boxes.
"Sound move, Sant. Keep their posteriors planted just so," says Twentyman approvingly. "Can't be too careful with the 33rd on hand, thieving Irish scoundrels to a man, desperate fellows. So, keep an eye down on the dollars, or Paddy'll be over the hedge with his pockets jingling, what? I say, dragoman, jildi jow, sub at me, push caro."
The dragoman bellowed and belaboured the coolies with his staff, and we were propelled towards the head of the causeway. I said it was as well they had a railway with freight as heavy as mine, and how far did it go?
5 miles so far, says Twentyman cheerfully. "It's about 120 to Attocrat, so it's mules for you, I'm afraid, sir. They do 12 miles a day, supposing you can get 'em, for we've fewer than 10,000 pack animals when we're supposed to have 30,000. Well, I ask you, Bombay Bandabast, what?"
I thank God privately that I wasn't part of the expedition, and asked how quickly I could get word to Napier of my arrival.
"Oh, couple of hours. Telegraph's only halfway to Attocrat, but we've flag signalling by day, magnesium flare lamps for night messages, latest thing, bang up to date, what? Ah, there's one of the deputation. Hello, Henty. He's here at last."
As we jumped down, a burly beef-faced chap in a dust coat and kepi was striding up, grinning hugely with his hand out.
"Don't remember me, Sir Harry, I'll be bound," cries he. "George Henty of the Standard. We shared a billet with Billy Russell and Lou Nolan at Sevastopol, and you went down with dysentery before poor old Lou got himself killed and you and Cardigan charged to glory."
He pumped my fin like a long-lost brother, but shot if I could place him.
"Do you know, you launched my journalistic career," cries he. "I was in the hospital commissariat, you know, until I offered a piece to the Advertiser describing your part in the charge, and, well, here I am, eh?"
I found myself wondering if he was the idiot who'd written that foul purple tosh which George Paget, curse him, had clipped out and framed and hung in the Fourth Light's mess, all about,
with what nobility and power the gallant flashman rode, his eye flashing terribly.
And farting like a deflating balloon, had they but known. My immediate thought was to give this